This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, the United States Senate questions House managers and the president's legal team.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
If the Senate goes this road of a lengthy proceeding with a lot more witnesses, and then I want to ask this question and just plant it as a thought. Is that going to be the new norm for impeachment?
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
When I look at all of this, whether it's the late need of witnesses after you said you proved your case, if it's how the privileges apply or not apply, Senator Schumer said we get anybody we want, we'd be here for a very, very long time. That's not good for the United States.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live, everybody. I am Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Happy Thursday to you. And we might be, dare I say it, folks, we might be about done. There appears to possibly be a light at the end of the impeachment trial tunnel. Now, it's impossible to say for sure, but it looks more and more likely that final votes in this trial might occur as early as tomorrow. Let me explain that just a little bit. Yesterday, as we told you on the broadcast, the Senate moved into its question and answer phase. And if you were watching, you know that it was a pretty significant shift from what we saw during the presentation stage, where only one side at a time was up and they were able to speak uninterrupted. Yesterday, from about 1 o'clock in the afternoon until about 11 o'clock at night, senators actually had to write their questions down on cards. They were then passed up to the Chief Justice of the United States, who then read them. And whichever party that the question was addressed to then had up to 5 minutes to respond. And sometimes the questions were addressed to both sides. So we are going to be playing sound for you from those questions throughout the show. There was quite a bit where questions were posed to our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, acting in his private capacity as counsel to the president. But there was 8 hours of that back and forth, more than 90 questions. I think the count that I saw was that 93 questions were asked in all. So there was a lot of back and forth. And then there will be 8 more hours of that again today, and that will be the end of the questioning phase. And then tomorrow is going to be a very critical day, folks. I'm sure you've seen this talked about in the media. This is where a lot of the attention has been for some time now. We have tried to walk you through this phase by phase, but what's going to happen tomorrow is the Senate is going to be debating for 4 hours and then voting on and deciding whether or not to call additional witnesses. Remember, we had 17 public witnesses in the House. We also had an 18th witness that his testimony remains private. We'll talk about that more in a little bit. But 17 public witnesses. The question will be whether or not to call additional witnesses in the United States Senate and also whether to seek additional documents. And folks, that is going to be a real pivot point in this trial because there are two sort of ways that the trial can proceed. If additional witnesses are called, it could be a very long process. So we're going to play sound from Jay on the floor of the Senate explaining why it would be a very long process. If they aren't called, if the United States Senate decides that they've heard enough, that the evidence is, that they've reviewed the case that was brought by House managers and they are ready to make a decision, the Senate could move to a final vote as early as tomorrow. We told you yesterday that a number of Democrats were considering voting to exonerate the president of the United States. That would make it a bipartisan rejection of both articles. Today, it appears that there are a number of so-called swing Republicans who are also joining the consensus that folks, not only are they going to vote to exonerate, but they have seen enough. They've seen the evidence. They've reviewed it. They don't think additional witnesses are necessary. We got statements from a couple of those senators, specifically Cory Gardner and Martha McSally. They will be voting to bring the trial to a resolution tomorrow. So we're going to get into all of that with Professor Harry Hutchison after the break. Again, we're going to play sound for you from Jay Sekulow from the floor of the Senate. And we'll also bring you more reporting on some things that might be ahead today. There might be some fireworks today in the second day of questioning from senators to both councils. We'll get into all of that. But I think I probably speak for most of you and probably most Americans, maybe on both sides of the aisle, when I say that I'm ready for the United States Senate to return to the business of the American people. I think we've seen a robust presentation from both sides. I think it's time to move past this. I think it's time for the United States Senate to fulfill their constitutional duty. These articles are now in the Senate. They've held their trial. It's been 2 weeks. It's time for the United States Senate to vote, and it's time to return to the business of the American people. And folks, I think that's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know for sure, but that's my prediction. I think the United States Senate is going to wrap this trial up tomorrow. We'll be back for this break.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to J Secular Live. If you are joining us on Facebook or Periscope, had a conversation with Professor Hutchison during the break about how the House managers really are trying to have this both ways right now. They are presenting that they have made their entire case. They think they have proven their case. They think they have proven it beyond a shadow of a doubt, and that the United States senator should vote to convict and remove the president of the United States. At the same time, however, even though they say their case is complete, they think they should be calling additional witnesses to finish their case. So I'm not quite sure how you square that circle and how both of those things can be true at the same time. Professor Hutchison had some good points on this. I want to bring him into the conversation. But before we do that, I want to set it up for you, because this conversation actually played out on the floor of the United States Senate. Jay was asked a question about this, about if we do go into a witness phase, how long will that take? How long will the business of the Senate be sidelined? And can it be possible that both the case is fully made and additional witnesses are needed? So I want you to listen to this. I want you to listen to the list of witnesses that Jay says that he would call if it goes to this phase. And then I also want you to listen very closely, because he actually addresses Chairman Schiff, who's sitting like 6 feet away from him at this point. And you might not be able to hear it, but Chairman Schiff actually responds to him, and Jay tells you what his response is. So this is yesterday on the floor of the United States Senate, Bite 23, Jay Sekulow.
There has been conflicting testimony about how long the Senate might be tied up in obtaining additional evidence. At the beginning of this trial, the minority leader offered 11 amendments to obtain additional evidence in the form of documents and depositions from several federal agencies. If the Senate had adopted all 11 of these amendments, how long do you think this impeachment trial would take?
It would take a long time. It would take a long time just to get through those motions. But there have been 17 witnesses. We're talking about now additional witnesses that the managers have put forward and that Democratic leader Schumer has discussed. He's discussed four witnesses in particular, as if this body would, if it were to grant witnesses, would say, yes, you get those four witnesses, and the White House and the President's counsel gets what? Whatever I want. That's what he said, Mr. Schumer. Whatever I want, here's who I want. I want Adam Schiff. I want Hunter Biden. I want Joe Biden. I want the whistleblower. I want to also understand there may be additional people within the House Intelligence Committee that have had conversations with that whistleblower. I get anybody we want. By the way, if we get anybody we want, we will be here for a very long time. The fact of the matter is, we're not here to argue witnesses tonight, but it obviously is an undercurrent. But to say that this is not going to extend this proceeding, months. Because understand something else. Despite the, you know, executive privilege and other nonsense, I suspect Manager Schiff, smart guy, he's going to say, wait a minute, I got some speech and debate privileges that may be applicable to this. I'm not saying that they are, but they may raise it, be legitimate to raise it. So this is a process that we would be, this would be the first of many weeks. I think we've got to be clear. They put this forward in an aggressive and fast-paced way. And now they're saying, well, now we need witnesses. After 31 or 32 times you said you proved every aspect of your case. That's what you said. Well, you didn't. You just said he did. Well, then I don't think we need any witnesses.
Harry, you heard it in the sound there. Jay actually turned to Manager Schiff and said, you said 31 or 32 times in your presentation that you had proved your case. And if you listen very closely, Chairman Schiff said, we did. And Jay echoed that for the chamber. So he's claiming that he's proved his case, and yet he wants the United States Senate to then call additional witnesses. Harry, you've covered a lot of these things before, a lot of trials, a lot of proceedings. Those two things cannot simultaneously both be true.
I think that is correct, but that is precisely, in a nutshell, the Democrats' case. They basically are arguing two things that are contradictory. On one hand, impeaching President Trump is a solemn case, and it's a solemn issue. It calls for prayer. And Nancy Pelosi says that she has prayed for this president every single day. And yet, Nancy Pelosi then goes to the trouble of handing out souvenir pens. And the only thing missing from that signing ceremony, as I suggested earlier, was perhaps an impeachment dance. Now, House Democrats say they have proved their case, that the case is overwhelming, that they have proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt. But hey, guess what? Now we need new witnesses. We should keep in mind this fact, that the House of Representatives called 18 fact witnesses, as I understand. They allowed House Republicans to call exactly zero factual witnesses. And so, again, that was a one-sided process in the House, and now they believe that they get to call only Democrat witnesses. Well, the Senate is committed to a fair trial, unlike the House of Representatives, and a fair trial means that the president and the president's counsel get the opportunity to call their witnesses and to cross-examine their witnesses. And guess what? In the Senate, the House does not control the process. The House of Representatives has the sole power to impeach. The Senate has the sole power to convict. And I think the Senate should not allow itself to be paralyzed by last-minute tricks by the House Democrats. Keep in mind, this is precisely the playbook offered by the Democrats during the Justice Kavanaugh hearings. Guess what? At the very last minute, there was this surprise witness. Well, we all know that surprise witness lacked credibility. Virtually all of the witnesses that the House Democrats wish to call in this impeachment hearing, and I won't necessarily name them, they all lack credibility. And on the public record itself, the credibility of the witnesses that the House Democrats now wish to call have been called into question by whom? The House Democrats themselves.
Article 1, Sections 3 and 5 articulate what Harry just said. The Senate controls the rules in the Senate. Speaker Pelosi can no longer do it. Lisa on Facebook said, wow, Jay just ended the Democrats' case in one bite. I felt the same way. Candace on Facebook brings up an issue I want to get to briefly, play a little bit of sound from Jay. She says, why did Chief Justice Roberts stop Rand Paul from mentioning the whistleblower's name? Rand Paul did try to submit a question that allegedly had the whistleblower's name, or at least the reported whistleblower's name in it, and the Chief Justice declined to read it. Initially, he was declining to read anything related to this issue. I want to quickly play some sound from Jay addressing the political bias potentially of the whistleblower. We may have to finish the discussion on the other side of the break, but I want you to hear how Jay addressed this when it came up, because it's directly relevant to Candace's question. This is Byte 22, Jay Sekulow responding to a question on the floor of the Senate.
You refuse to answer the question on political bias. Are the House managers refusing to tell the Senate whether or not the so-called whistleblower had an actual conflict of interest? There are 7 billion people on planet Earth. Almost all had no involvement in Biden's quid pro quo. Are the House managers unwilling to say whether the so-called whistleblower was a fact witness who directly participated in and could face criminal or civil liability for Joe Biden's demanding Ukraine fire the prosecutor who was investigating Burisma? And why did you refuse to transmit to the Senate the Inspector General transcript?
Page 5 of the Inspector General's report states, although the Inspector General's preliminary review identified some indicia of arguable political bias on the part of the complainant. Now, that's in the actual statement. He goes on to say, involving a rival political candidate, such evidence did not change his view about the credible nature of the concern or the what appears to be credible. But to argue that it does not include an issue of political bias, the Inspector General himself says that that's, in fact, at least that they said that their preliminary views indicate some political bias. Now, there's been reports in the media that the individual may have worked for Joe Biden when he was vice president. He may have had some area of under his watch involving Ukraine. But I also thought it was just interesting that Manager Schiff just talked about the importance of how they control the process as it relates to a whistleblower reports because of the sensitive nature of those. Do we not think that the sensitive nature of information shared by the president's most senior advisors should not be subject to the same type of protections? Well, of course, it has to be.
In the House manager's case, that protection only cuts both ways. Of course, the political bias of the underlying complainant is relevant to this. After the break, I'm going to explain a little bit more why Senator Paul was so upset that his question was not read. I think this is going to be one of the dramatic points in today's proceedings. I don't know exactly how this is going to play out, but I will explain it to you after the break. A little bit more sound as well from Jay on the floor, but we're just about 40 minutes away from folks, what I think is going to be the second to last day of this impeachment trial. Back after this break.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. and we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. If you were joining us by Facebook or Periscope during the break, you saw a video talking about where the votes lie on various issues in the United States Senate. Of course, all of this is based on reports. Some senators have put statements out, and you never fully know until votes are cast. But the video was talking about how there are reports that a couple of Republican senators, namely Cory Gardner and Martha McSally, who Democrats had been targeting to vote with them to extend this trial, call additional witnesses, many of which the House did not call. They have now said they are not going to do that. They have seen enough evidence. They are ready to vote. There are also indications that Lisa Murkowski and Lamar Alexander may be leaning that way as well. We haven't seen quite as firm of a statement from them. But that would mean, even if the two remaining Republicans that have been talked about, Susan Collins and Mitt Romney, were to vote to extend the trial, the Democrats would still be two votes short of the 51 necessary to extend the trial out. That would mean, folks, that tomorrow, after 4 hours of debate and then disposing of that motion on calling additional witnesses, Leader McConnell could call for a final vote on the underlying articles, and it is expected that he would do that. If that happens, folks, here's what I'm going to project to you. I think you're going to see at least 55 votes for the exoneration of President Trump. I think there's a list of Democrat senators out there who said it's on the table for them. Joe Manchin and Doug Jones are getting the most press, but I think also someone like Kyrsten Sinema. And look, I think there could be some surprises. I think when you heard Dianne Feinstein say that this should be left to the American people, it leaves the door open for maybe several Democrats to join on. But either way, here's my prediction. I think there will be a bipartisan exoneration of President Trump, and I think it's going to happen before the Senate adjourns tomorrow. We'll wait and see, but that's what I think right now. Before we went to a break, we had a comment on Facebook asking about what happened between Senator Rand Paul and the Chief Justice. And I want to explain that just briefly because I think that's going to come up again. And there's actually some relevant sound from Jay on this as well. But Senator Paul was trying to ask a question about the political bias of the whistleblower. And in his question, he actually named the reported name of the whistleblower. It's been out in many reports. Most of you are probably aware of what it is. And the Chief Justice, by all accounts in the chamber, was not willing to read it. It seemed like maybe he was not willing to read questions in that genre at all. There was a little bit of a dust up. Senator Paul got very upset during the break. He quoted Article 1 and Article 2 of the Constitution, reportedly said that the Senate has sole authority to conduct this and that the Chief Justice was overstepping his bounds. In the end, there were questions that were read more generically, but the name of the whistleblower was still not read. Senator Paul has put out a statement that he is going to try to force this issue when the Senate reconvenes today at 1 o'clock. I don't know exactly how this is going to play out, but I do think it's relevant when it comes to discussion of the Chief Justice's role in this. Look, I'm going to play some sound from Jay on this, but my own view on this is that the founders intentionally gave the sole power of impeachment to a branch that had to go back and have political accountability to the voters, the United States Senate. So when it comes to matters of whether or not the Chief Justice can give final disposition of some of these things, certainly the Senate could overrule them. But I very much lean towards the Senate having the final say when there is a dispute. Not everyone agrees with me, and it came up on the floor of the Senate. It wasn't directly related to the Senator Paul issue, but I wanted to play this sound because it articulates the debate that's happening between what role the Chief Justice should play and how assertive the Senate should be in asserting its rights under the Constitution. This is Jay Sekulow responding to a question read by the Chief Justice on the floor of the Senate yesterday, Bite 25.
The House managers have committed to abide by rulings by the Chief Justice regarding witness testimony and the admissibility of evidence and that they will not appeal such rulings. Will the President's counsel make the same commitment, thus obviating any concerns about an extended trial?
We are not willing to do that. And we are not willing to do that because the constitutional framework upon which an impeachment is based and the constitutional privileges that are at stake, with no due disrespect at all to the Chief Justice, that's not the constitutional design. It's the same thing they're doing again. Surrender constitutional prerogatives you have, and then we will proceed in this way. Give us documents, give us witnesses, and if you don't, we're going to charge you with obstruction of Congress. In this case, it's we are willing to live, according to the managers, by whatever the Chief Justice decides. But that is not the way the constitutional framework is set up. And it's putting us in exactly the same spot again. Give up your right to challenge a subpoena in court. Rely only on the who is here, by the way, again, with no disrespect to the Chief Justice. The Chief Justice is here as the presiding officer of this proceeding. So the President is not willing to forgo those rights and privileges that he possesses under the Constitution, under Article 2, for expediency. They tried that below in the House. We trust that will not be the decision here in the Senate.
Harry, to me, this is one of those issues that transcends the attack or the impeachment effort on President Trump. You heard Jay in that soundbite defending the president's Article 2 authorities. There's also very significant Article 1 authorities that belong to the United States Senate. Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6 gives the sole power of impeachment to the United States Senate. So in my view, this is one of those that transcends this president and speaks to the presidency, also speaks to the integrity of the United States Senate. Deferring to the Chief Justice on these things, whether it be the whistleblower or any other motions, Harry, in my view, that upsets the careful framework that our founders put in place.
I think that's precisely correct. So the Democrats, as is the typical case, the Democrats always have an offer. An offer to the American people, an offer to President Trump. Here's the offer. Give up your constitutional rights, otherwise we will claim that you are being unfair. When the facts on the ground show, beyond question, it is House Democrats who have been consistently unfair throughout this entire process. They have denied the President of the United States with due process. They have denied the President of the United States with elementary fairness. They've denied House Republicans with the right to call their own witnesses. They have essentially denied the President with the right to cross-examine the 18 fact witnesses called by the House Democrats. They've denied House Republicans the opportunity to cross-examine the whistleblower who launched this entire impeachment inquiry. And so at the end of the day, we cannot accept the Democrats' last offer. Basically, to do so amounts to a suicide pact in which we give up our constitutional rights in order to be seen as fair by House Democrats. It's an offer we should be prepared to reject.
Folks, there are bigger questions at play here than whether or not to convict and remove President Trump. As big as that question is, there are questions about the proper role of the Senate and also the role of the American voter. All of those things are on the table. We're about 30 minutes from the trial coming back into session here. When we come back from the break, I'm going to reset some of the late-breaking developments, where senators stand, where I expect them to vote, who the wild cards are, and how tomorrow might play out. Join us for the next 30 minutes of Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now your host, Dan Bennett.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We were having a conversation during the break about what to expect tomorrow. And really, it's going to come down to a couple of senators, I believe, at least on the question of calling additional witnesses. Remember, we've already had 18 witnesses in the House. 17 of them are public. One of them, the Intelligence Committee Inspector General, his testimony has not been released. Purportedly, it's because it talks about the whistleblower and the political bias. So I think that testimony might be relevant. But the question tomorrow will be whether or not additional witnesses will be called. They get to debate that when they come into session at 1 o'clock for 4 hours and then take a vote on it. And I think on that vote, you need to most closely watch two senators. I think you need to watch Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who actually gave some indication yesterday that maybe she has seen enough as well, but she hasn't put out a statement like Cory Gardner did. I also think you need to watch Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. He also seems to be leaning against calling additional witnesses, but ultimately Democrats would need to convince both of them, most likely, to get to 51 votes on any slate of witnesses. Now, keep in mind, some of the slate of witnesses that will be proposed are really ridiculous. They're just the Democrats getting to call all of the witnesses again, just like happened in the House, not affording the president's team an opportunity to call any. Those proposals will certainly fail. I feel confident in that. If there is a proposal of maybe a mixed slate, you might have Mitt Romney and Susan Collins voting for it. But I think that might be it. I think they only might get to 49 when they need 51. I want to play for you some late-breaking sound. Actually happened just a few minutes ago. A reporter asked Senator Graham about the latest state of play on this, where he thinks the votes are for calling additional witnesses. And here's what he had to say just moments ago. This is Byte 11.
Sir, on what do you base your increasing optimism that you'll block witnesses?
Everybody believes that there's a scintilla of evidence that the Bidens were involved in business practices that undercut U.S. foreign policy interests in the Ukraine. The manager said this is a hoax, it's been debunked, it hasn't. If there's not a scintilla of evidence, I would argue if you can find a scintilla of evidence, then it makes the president's concerns reasonable.
Harry, I think this goes back to the sound that we opened the broadcast with, and I actually want to play again in the next segment of the broadcast where Jay turned to manager Schiff and he said, you said 31 or 32 times that your case has been made, your case has been proven, and manager Schiff said it has, and Jay said, well, then why do we need to call additional witnesses? I don't think we have to. Harry, I think that moment yesterday revealed that manager Schiff and the others are trying to have it both ways. I don't think the Senate's going to go for it.
I agree with you, and I would also say, again, this is all part of a Democratic playbook. In other words, they always want to have it both ways. On one hand, they've proved their case, and it's overwhelming, beyond a reasonable shadow of a doubt. That's one claim. In addition, they claim that the Bidens, for instance, are irrelevant to the impeachment inquiry. And then the question becomes, well, why did they refer to Hunter and Joe Biden approximately 300 to 400 times in their own presentation? So in other words, they spent all of this time in their 21 and a half or 23 hour presentation to the Senate, and they talked extensively about the Bidens, and now they claim it's all debunked. Why did you spend all of that time on a quote-unquote debunked issue? So they raised that issue in their presentation, and clearly beyond question, The president is entitled to cross-examine witnesses with relevant information concerning the Bidens, if indeed witnesses are called. Now, I favor a strategy in which witnesses are not called, in part because the House has not proven its case.
We are going to know the final answer to that probably sometime tomorrow around dinner time. 4 hours of debate starting at 1 o'clock, probably a break in the middle, and then a vote. And folks, if they opt not to call additional witnesses, I think the light at the end of the tunnel will be upon us. I think a final vote will proceed immediately after. And I predict a bipartisan exoneration of the President of the United States. More sound for you from the Senate floor after this break.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. I want to actually go straight to a call. Julie's been holding on for quite a while from California. I want to get into a couple of these other issues, sound from Jay on the floor of the Senate. But, Julie, appreciate you calling in. Appreciate you holding on. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you, Fan. First of all, you and Harry, but you especially, are doing a wonderful job hosting the show. And we finally get to hear you talk, so I love it.
Thanks, Julie.
My comment is, what makes me so angry as a voter, we elected the president, and we set up our government to give different bodies different powers, like the Congress and the Senate and the judicial branch and the president. But the Democrats have been using every single part of the government, whether it's the FBI or the National Security Council or unmasking at the UN, to do nothing but investigate Trump. And I wish they would just stick to what their job is. And that's my comment.
Yeah,
my question is, what do you think changed the tide yesterday where now more senators are saying, let's just get this over with?
Well, let me say a couple things. First of all, to your comment about the bureaucracy, I mean, this is something that we've talked about many times on this broadcast. I do think that the big government left in Washington, D.C. likes to use the unelected bureaucracy to accomplish its will. I mean, the example that comes to mind is the IRS targeting that we combated for many years. Had dozens of clients who were unfairly targeted by the IRS. And it goes back, Harry, to the conversation we had about the Chief Justice's role in this. Look, he's an innocent player in this. He's got a role under the Constitution. But I want the politically accountable branch, the United States Senate, the Article 1 branch, branch to retain its power that it has under Article 1. I don't want them to defer to the Chief Justice on this. I want your comment on that, but I also want to respond to Julie's question about what I think the pivotal moment was, and I want your thoughts on this as well. I thought the pivotal moment was when Jay was able to expose Manager Schiff in saying, we have both proven our case and we need additional witnesses. I think the senators who were trying to look at this with open eyes and an open mind said, well, if you've proven your case, if this is the evidence, then why can't we vote on it and return to the work of the American people? What did you think, Harry? What did you think was the pivotal moment? And what do you think about the unelected bureaucrat comment that Julie made?
Well, number one, I would say that we should look at this particular process probably from a 10,000-foot level. And so under the United States Constitution, the President of the United States retains Article 2 powers. The House of Representatives under Article 1 retains powers, and the Senate retains powers. And so if you look at the actual conduct under review, Manager Schiff continues to shelter the Inspector General of the intelligence community. They want to shelter his testimony from being released because they believe that the House of Representatives under Article 1 retains certain constitutional privileges. And to a great extent, I agree with that. But by the same token, the Senate retains constitutional privileges. They are not necessarily bound by the approach taken by the House. And then thirdly, I would point out, the President of the United States retains Article 2 powers, meaning that he retains the right of executive privilege pursuant to separation of powers, pursuant to the fact that the president essentially is a unitary executive. And therefore, the bargain that the House of Representatives continues to offer is purely one-sided. We will retain our power. We will retain our Article 2 power. But Mr. President, please give up your Article 2 powers, and then we will achieve fairness. At the end of the day, this entire process is grounded in unfairness because the House of Representatives, as I said previously, they initiated an unfair process without cross-examination, without allowing House Republicans to call their own witnesses, without allowing the president to cross-examine their 18 fact witnesses. They denied the president the right to call any fact witnesses. They denied the right of House Republicans to call any factual witnesses. So at the end of the day, what we have is an unbalanced process. And I think that process is becoming more and more obvious to all Americans.
Thanks, Harry. We are privileged now to be joined by our executive director, a member of the president's legal team, Jordan Sekulow. Jordan, one more day of questioning, and I don't know if you want to respond to this, but I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I think the end of this thing is just around the corner.
Well, that's the hope, you know, but we're prepared for all options. You know, probably a full day today going late into the night. I mean, these 8 hours of questions, as you know, Than, working on Capitol Hill, it's not 8 hours straight. There's breaks. That doesn't count towards the time. So it's not like it starts at 1 and it's over at 9. So we're prepared for that. Then we're prepared for the next day, which will be the vote on the witness question and the evidence question. And then there'll be 4 hours of argument, 2 hours for each side on that tomorrow. And then, you know, we're going to really know where things are at that point. But we're prepared for every possible outcome. And today is important today because we get to directly answer the senators' questions and their follow-ups from the questions they asked yesterday. And I think that's important as well.
Jordan, I know you only have a minute here, but I wanted to ask you, if you have just a second, we've been playing the sound of your dad asking Manager Schiff, saying, you know, you said 31 or 32 times you proved your case, and yet you need to call additional witnesses. What was the tenor in the room when that exchange happened?
Uh, was a very strong statement that I think resonated with a lot of folks who were on the line about that question, and they realized that when this is a team that says, on the one hand, you know, we didn't get what we wanted, on the other hand, we've proved our case, and they started to try to bring in bribery and extortion into the two articles that they didn't put in, and making this case that abuse of power is actually the highest, even though they could have put one of those would actually be from, you know, directly from the Constitution and the impeachment clause. So, I think, you know, we called out directly, too, that, you know, this idea that they're just going to be able to call witnesses, not us, be absurd. And as my dad pointed out, when Chuck Schumer said, well, you can have anyone you want, he said, anyone I want, Leader Schumer, that's anyone. So he pointed, he said, I want Adam Schiff. I want Joe Biden. I want Hunter Biden. I want the whistleblower, and I want your staff, Adam Schiff, and all the contacts they've had with that whistleblower. So that made sense to the room, is that, again, the relevancy. So, again, I think it's going to be the question times. It's very interesting because they come at you kind of the way it works kind of slow because they come through these written questions, but then they come right at you through the Chief Justice, and you respond between 3 and 5 minutes. So, again, it could be a very long one another day. But then you know, you can see starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel, if you will.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Jordan, just very quickly, about a minute and a half left in this segment. But I think the presentations yesterday had an impact because we heard statements from senators on both sides afterwards that seemed to indicate that they're moving towards the president and that this thing would wrap up. I know you probably don't want to comment on individual senators, but maybe a comment on it is appropriate for those who have to go back to the American voters and get their vote. They're the ones, Jordan, that get the final say in this, not an unelected bureaucrat. And quite frankly, no due respect, not the Chief Justice. It's the senators who make the call.
Well, Dan, this is it's Jay. So I just wanted to say to everybody that we appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers as we get ready to go in. But with regard to that question, I mean, I think that's the truth. I mean, the fact is, look, each one of these individual senators are going to come to their own conclusion. We've put on and continue to put on a very strong case. We're not done yet. We've got another 8 hours of questioning today and then arguments on witnesses tomorrow. So we'll probably have an answer to that by tomorrow evening. And then assuming there's no witnesses, you know, we would probably go to closing arguments either Friday evening or Saturday morning. That's how it's looking.
Thanks, Jay. I'll just tell you, we're coming up to a break here, but our listeners want you to know they're thinking of you and praying for you. Appreciate you joining us here for a few minutes. Folks, you're not going to get that anywhere else. Jay Sekulow, Jordan Sekulow, I assume from just off the floor of the United States Senate because they're about 13 minutes away from resuming the trial. Again, you're not going to get that anywhere else. I'm grateful for the input because as I watched the proceedings yesterday, I thought that moment, that exchange between Jay and Manager Schiff exposed the fallacy of the case all along. I don't think this was ever about getting to the end of a case. I think it was about trying to undermine the president. And Manager Schiff tried to say that he had finished his case, that he'd proven his case, that they'd made their case, but we still want to have additional witnesses. If you've made your case, if you've proven it and you're ready to turn it over to senators, then why take the Senate's time any longer and continue to call witnesses? I think it was at that moment that a number of these senators who may have been on the fence about extending the trial thought, okay, time is up. I don't need to hear from more witnesses. I'm ready to cast my vote. My prediction, folks, I know Jay and Jordan didn't want to go there, and I certainly understand that. I think this is over tomorrow. They're certainly ready for any possibility. They're preparing for any possibility. I think this thing is coming to an end tomorrow night, and I think the president will be exonerated in a bipartisan vote. We'll be back after this on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everybody. Before the break, we were privileged to be joined by both Jay Sekulow and Jordan Sekulow for just a few minutes, giving you an update from just off the floor of the United States Senate as they prepare for day two of Senator questions. I'll tell you, while I have missed them here, it's more fun when they're in studio doing this show. I'm glad they are where they are, and I'm grateful that they would take a few minutes out of their time to call and give us an update as we're just about 10 minutes away from trial resuming. Folks, as we close the broadcast today, I want to take time to do two more sound bites from you. One of them gets into this issue of the comparisons that are going back to 1999 and how we need to call witnesses like we did in 1999. Jay addressed this on the floor of the United States Senate and showed how it's not an apples-to-apples comparison and how the witnesses that were called then were already in the record and were directly relevant and had, in fact, been presented as evidence by the House in that case. I wanted you to hear this soundbite. It's Bite 18, Jay, on the floor of the Senate yesterday.
Senator Roberts asks, would you please respond to the arguments or assertions the House managers made in response to the previous questions?
I want to respond to a couple. First, with regard to the question or the issues that have been raised as it relates to witnesses, it's important to note that in the Clinton impeachment proceeding, the witnesses that actually gave deposition testimony were witnesses that had either been interviewed by deposition in the House proceedings, grand jury proceedings, and it was specifically, it was Sid Blumenthal, Vernon Jordan, and Amanda Lewinsky. The new witnesses were not being called. That's because the House, in their process, moved forward with a full investigation. That did not happen here. There was another statement that was raised by Mr. Chairman Schiff, Manager Schiff, regarding the Chief Justice could make the determination on executive privilege. And again, with no disrespect to the Chief Justice, the idea that the presiding officer of this proceeding could determine a waiver or the applicability of executive privilege would be quite a step. There's nothing historic precedent. There's no historic precedent that would justify it. But there's something else. If we get to the point of witnesses, then, for instance, if one of the witnesses to be called were by the president's lawyers was Adam Schiff in the role basically of Ken Starr. Ken Starr presented the report, made the presentation before the House of Representatives, had about 12 hours of questioning, I believe, is what Judge Starr had. If Representative Schiff was called as a witness, would in fact then issues of speech and debate clause privilege be litigated and decided by the presiding officer, or would it go to court, or maybe they would waive it? But those would be the kind of issues that would be very, very significant.
Harry, I wanted to ask you about this because I think Chairman Schiff could be called as a witness, certainly in the role of Ken Starr, as Jay alluded to, but also as a material fact witness for his interaction or his staff's interaction, at least, with the whistleblower. And there's no indication that he wants to waive all of the rights available to him. Of course, even if he would, it wouldn't mean that the president would have to waive his. But look, Chairman Schiff is a relevant witness. He has certain rights that he could claim as well. And if we do grant witnesses, I suspect Chairman Schiff will be on the president's team's witness list. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
I think that's true. And I think Adam Schiff might be willing to invoke his Fifth Amendment privileges under the United States Constitution. And so then we would have this lovely prospect of turning Adam Schiff's words around to impeach Mr. Schiff. Recall, Adam Schiff has said, if the president is innocent, why would he oppose new witnesses? Or why would the president oppose witness testimony? And so this would be a perfect opportunity for Adam Schiff to clear the air, if indeed he was called as a witness and he testified truthfully before the United States Senate. Now, Adam Schiff's problem, of course, is Adam Schiff has said mutually contradictory things in the past. And so any testimony before the United States Senate would raise the risk that he would be impeached by prior public statements. So if I were Adam Schiff's attorney, I might advise him to invoke the Fifth Amendment. But guess what? Adam Schiff is not willing to extend constitutional privileges to President Trump. And that illustrates the one-sided unfairness of this entire process. And I think the House of Representatives case is fatally undermined because they fail to follow a constitutionally mandated process. They fail to allow cross-examination of witnesses. They fail to allow House Republicans to call witnesses. So I think turnabout would be fair play, and I would love to see Adam Schiff testify publicly, particularly about his interactions with or his staff's interactions with the whistleblower.
Folks, I want to close the broadcast with the moment that I thought was the pivot point yesterday on the floor of the Senate. This is Byte 23, Jay responding to a question. I think this was the pivot point. Let's play it. Byte 23.
There has been conflicting testimony about how long the Senate might be tied up in obtaining additional evidence. At the beginning of this trial, the minority leader offered 11 amendments to obtain additional evidence in the form of documents and depositions from several federal agencies. If the Senate had adopted all 11 of these amendments, how long do you think this impeachment trial would take?
It would take a long time. It would take a long time just to get through those motions. But there have been 17 witnesses. We're talking about now additional witnesses that the managers have put forward and that Democratic leader Schumer has discussed. He's discussed four witnesses in particular, as if this body would, if it were to grant witnesses, would say, yes, you get those four witnesses, and the White House and the President's counsel gets what? Whatever I want. That's what he said, Mr. Schumer. Whatever I want, here's who I want. I want Adam Schiff. I want Hunter Biden. I want Joe Biden. I want the whistleblower. I want to also understand there may be additional people within the House Intelligence Committee that have had conversations with that whistleblower. I get anybody we want. By the way, if we get anybody we want, we will be here for a very long time. The fact of the matter is, we're not here to argue witnesses tonight, but it obviously is an undercurrent. But to say that this is not going to extend this proceeding, months. Because understand something else. Despite the, you know, executive privilege and other nonsense, I suspect Manager Schiff, smart guy, he's going to say, wait a minute, I got some speech and debate privileges that may be applicable to this. I'm not saying that they are, but they may raise it, be legitimate to raise it. So this is a process that we would be, this would be the first of many weeks. I think we've got to be clear. They put this forward in an aggressive and fast-paced way. And now they're saying, well, now we need witnesses. After 31 or 32 times, you said you proved every aspect of your case. That's what you said. Well, you didn't. He just said he did. Well, then I don't think we need any witnesses.
I think that sums it up pretty well. Say a prayer for Jay and Jordan. They're about ready to go into 8 more hours of questioning. And then, folks, I think the light at the end of the tunnel reaches us tomorrow. I think this thing wraps up tomorrow, and I think the president is exonerated. Either way, we'll be back with you tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.